Welcome to Poems for Company. I'm your host, Brian Dillon. Today's episode focuses on writings that grant us perspectives on Abraham Lincoln, from a man who saw him on a regular basis in Washington, D.C., as well as two 21st century female poets who know of him through books. These three writers display various degrees of empathy toward their subject. Their writings are appropriate for this month, as Lincoln was, of course, born in February, and also this season is the 160th anniversary of his assassination. Rather than title this show Lincoln, I'm highlighting the emotional responses writers have taken toward the 16th president, thus our title, Running on Empathy. The American poet Walt Whitman volunteered in Washington, D.C. hospitals treating wounded soldiers. Lacking medical skills, he provided comfort to the wounded soldiers by writing letters for them to send to family and friends back home, by feeding them, and by just listening to them. He wrote diary-like accounts of his time in the nation's capital when it was overcrowded with soldiers both wounded and healthy. Here's one of his diary-like accounts in his book Specimen Days, dated August 12th, 1863. I see the president almost every day, as I happen to live where he passes to or from his lodgings out of town. He never sleeps at the White House during the hot season, but has quarters at a healthy location some 3 miles north of the city, the Soldiers' Home, a United States military establishment. I saw him this morning about 8:30 coming into business, riding on Vermont Avenue near L Street. He always has a company of 25 or 30 cavalry, with sabers drawn and held upright over their shoulders. They say this guard was against his personal wish, but he let his counselors have their way. The party makes no great show in uniform or horses. Mr. Lincoln, on the saddle, generally rides a good-sized, easy-going gray horse, is dressed in plain black, somewhat rusty and dusty, wears a black stiff hat, and looks about as ordinary in attire, etc., as the commonest man. A lieutenant with yellow straps rides at his left, and following behind, two by two, come the cavalrymen in their yellow-striped jackets. They are generally going at a slow trot, as that is the pace set them by the one they wait upon. The sabers and accoutrements clank, and the entirely unornamental cortege, as it trots towards Lafayette Square, arouses no sensation. Only some curious stranger stops and gazes. In this same entry, Walt Whitman then comments on the unique appearance of Lincoln's face. He highlights the minimal security detail accompanying the president, who sometimes is on horseback and sometimes in a barouche, a four-wheeled carriage with two double seats facing each other. His 10-year-old son, Tad, rides alongside the president. So I'm going to continue reading a little bit more from this August 12, 1863 entry. I see very plainly Abraham Lincoln's dark brown face, with the deep-cut lines, the eyes, always to me with a deep latent sadness in the expression. We have got so that we exchange bows, and very cordial ones. Sometimes the president goes and comes in an open barouche. The cavalry always accompany him, with drawn sabers. Often I notice as he goes out evenings and sometimes in the morning when he returns early, he turns off and halts at the large and handsome residence of the Secretary of War on K Street and holds conference there. If in his barouche, I can see from my window he does not alight but sits in his vehicle and Mr. Stanton comes out to attend him. Sometimes one of his boys, a boy of 10 or 12, accompanies him, riding at his right on a pony. Earlier in the summer, I occasionally saw the president and his wife toward the latter part of the afternoon out in a barouche on a pleasure ride through the city. Mrs. Lincoln was dressed in complete black with a long crepe veil. The equipage is of the plainest kind, only two horses, and they nothing extra. They passed me once very close, and I saw the president in the face fully, as they were moving slowly, and his look, though abstracted, happened to be directed steadily in my eye. He bowed and smiled, but far beneath his smile I noticed well the expression I have alluded to. None of the artists or pictures has caught the deep, though subtle and indirect expression of this man's face. There is something else there. One of the great portrait painters of two or three centuries ago is needed. Mary Todd Lincoln, who was dressed in black to signal her mourning for her son Willie, who died in 1862, and Willie probably died due to drinking the water of the Potomac, contaminated by the refuse of army camps, latrines, and broken sewerage mains. So her grief over the rupture of the war was compounded by her son's death. A later entry by Whitman details Lincoln's appearance as he returns to the White House, essentially alone, on his second inauguration day in March 1865. He's just delivered his brief speech anticipating the closing days of the war and the need, quotes, to bind up the nation's wounds. The speech that includes the immortal phrases, with malice towards none, with charity towards all. This inauguration would be a little more than 5 weeks before the assassination at Ford's Theater. I'll read this passage from March of 1865. I saw him on his return at 3 o'clock after the performance was over. He was in his plain two-horse barouche and looked very much worn and tired. The lines, indeed, of vast responsibilities, intricate questions and demands of life and death cut deeper than ever upon his dark brown face. Yet all the old goodness, tenderness, sadness, and canny shrewdness underneath the furrows. I never see that man without feeling that he is one to become personally attached to, for his combination of purest, heartiest tenderness and native Western form of manliness. By his side sat his little boy of 10 years. There were no soldiers, only a lot of civilians on horseback, with huge yellow scarves over their shoulders, riding around the carriage. Considering Whitman's numerous up-close sightings of the president, Lincoln's son Tad, and the First Lady, the assassination that occurred in April would have powerfully affected this poet from Brooklyn. Whitman displays empathy for Lincoln most obviously in the description of the president's face. His face is like a poem deserving of interpretation. Well, one Whitman poem written soon after Lincoln's assassination uses an analogy of a captain at sea to comment emotionally on the timing of Lincoln's death. We may imagine the poem is spoken by a ship's mate, literally, but in the analogy, a citizen of the Union who grieves about the timing of Lincoln's death. Within a week of Robert E. Lee's surrender to Ulysses Grant at Appomattox, Lincoln's death occurred so soon after his mission was accomplished, to free the slaves and to keep the Union intact, or at least as intact as possible. This is Whitman's 1865 poem, O Captain, My Captain. O Captain, My Captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack, the prize we sought is won. The port is near, the bells I hear, the people all exulting, while follow eyes the steady keel, the vessel grim and daring. But, O heart, 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 oh, the bleeding drops of red, where on the deck my captain lies, fallen cold and dead. Oh, captain, my captain, rise up and hear the bells. Rise up, for you the flag is flung, for you the bugle trills. For you bouquets and ribboned wreaths, for you the shores are crowding. For you they call, the swaying mass, their eager faces turning. Here, captain, dear father, this arm beneath your head, it is some dream that on the deck you've fallen cold and dead. My captain does not answer, his lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm, he has no pulse nor will. The ship is anchored safe and sound, its voyage closed and done. From fearful trip, the victor ship comes in with object won. Exult, O shores, and ring, O bells, but I with mournful tread walk the deck my captain lies, fallen cold and dead. That's Walt Whitman's O Captain, My Captain. Whitman avoids relitigating the specific motives for the war. Furthermore, the poem states the people all exulting. Well, that would be people in the northern states at the time the poem was written, 1865, the year of Lincoln's death. More specifically, it would refer to the celebrations in Washington, D.C., and other cities in the north in those first few days after Lee's surrender was announced. The poet's devotion to his captain is like that of a son to a father. He says, "Here, captain, dear father," and as the speaker attempts to comfort the captain who has fallen dead on the ship's deck, he says, "My father does not feel my arm." A captain who guides a ship through stormy waters, as this captain has done, is a conventional way to speak of one deserving praise. We may agree it's a bit heavy-handed, even mawkish, but we must cut Whitman some slack. Having observed Lincoln on the streets of Washington, D.C., and transfixed by his face, Whitman believes he sees evidence of the interior life of the president, a man weighed down with the knowledge that the citizens of his country are slaughtering one another. Our next two poems, by 21st century poets, avoid straightforward praise, as Whitman relied upon in his poem. Kathleen Flanagan's To Ease My Mind tries to observe the president through the eyes of his wife, Mary Todd Lincoln. Before we hear the poem, some further background information is needed. Two terms that define Mary Todd Lincoln: sour and quarrelsome. In the final weeks of the war, just after the second inauguration, she accompanied her husband to the region just outside Richmond, Virginia, while he met with Grant and Sherman to plot how the war would end. She is off-putting to many, as haughty as her husband is modest and self-effacing. She would not win any awards for likability. Yet, Kathleen Flanagan, an award-winning poet from Washington State, tried to imagine why Mary Todd Lincoln behaved the way she did. Furthermore, of Mary Todd Lincoln's 14 brothers and half-brothers, 8 supported the Confederacy. Consequently, the Northern press was merciless with her. So in addition to the deaths of her boy Willie, and living with her husband's torment from the destruction of the Civil War, her own immediate family is divided over which side to support, which leads to constant attacks against her in the Northern press. In light of this, let's hear Kathleen Flanagan's To Ease My Mind, a fine example of poetry as empathy. If I woke as Mary Todd Lincoln, and if Abraham Lincoln slept next to me like an uprooted tree, his knobby fingers unearthed, his face a burl, gray as a Matthew Brady photograph, And if my country were at war, my own cousins killing my cousins, and I'd been told to tear the country's damask down, shred its opulence, to bandage the wounded. But I knew it was hopeless, hopeless. There'd be no stopping the blood of filthy, putrid common men until every human left had lost a child, a leg, an arm. And if I'd already given everything, if I'd given over my grieving husband, not without kicking and screaming, and the birds were silent to mark the never-ending end, then God forgive me. Perhaps I, too, would turn my mind to the pleasures of kidskin gloves adorned with pearls, embroidered daisies, and chrysanthemum stars, white on white filigree, so fine one might believe a fairy tatted them. I might need box upon box upon box of them to tell me who I am. That's To Ease My Mind from Kathleen Flanagan's 2000 volume, Famous. This 27-line poem is punctuated as two sentences, the first spilling out over 25 lines, the second closing the poem in a simple and profound couplet. Mary Todd Lincoln's husband sleeps next to her like an uprooted tree, his face lined like a burl, the poem says, that is, like a hemispheric outgrowth on a tree. Even at rest, he's grayish, like the images taken by Matthew Brady, the photographer made famous by the war. One inexplicable response by the First Lady to such grief, she purchased 84 pairs of kid gloves in less than a month. A historical fact, the poem suggests, is worthy of our empathy. These gloves are delicate and handmade, with white on white filigree, so fine one might believe a fairy tatted them. A fetish item that perhaps provides some brief consolation for her. Grief shopping. Let's hear Kathleen Flanagan's poem once more to ease my mind. If I woke as Mary Todd Lincoln, and if Abraham Lincoln slept next to me like an uprooted tree, his knobby fingers unearthed, his face a burl, gray as a Matthew Brady photograph, and if my country were at war, my own cousins killing my cousins, and I'd been told to tear the country's damask down, shred its opulence to bandage the wounded, but I knew it was hopeless, hopeless. There'd be no stopping the blood of filthy, putrid, common men until every human left had lost a child, a leg, an arm. And if I'd already given everything, if I'd given over my grieving husband, not without kicking and screaming, and the birds were silent to mark the never-ending end, then God forgive me. Perhaps I too would turn my mind to the pleasures of kidskin gloves adorned with pearls, embroidered daisies, and chrysanthemum stars, white on white filigree, so fine one might believe a fairy tatted them. I might need box upon box upon box of them to tell me who I am. That's Kathleen Flanagan's poem, To Ease My Mind. Our final poem, from Lee Stein's 2021 volume, What to Miss When, fluctuates between responses to Lincoln in the 1860s and what seems to me to be responses to the 2020 election. Here, Lee Stein quotes Emily Dickinson and Lincoln, their language noted by use of italics. Unpoetically, Stein's poem's title sounds like an index entry. Lincoln, Abraham, Melancholy Of. A note to the poem tells us the poet was prompted by a book examining Lincoln's melancholy. If his temperament was shaped by melancholy, did that trait assist or harm his judgment? Stein includes reference to Lincoln's nighttime visits to the tomb where his boy Willie's body was laid to rest. This is Lee Stein's Lincoln, Abraham, Melancholy Of. He had a sad nature, many said of Lincoln. Or as Emily put it, it feels a shame to be alive when men so brave are dead, dashing off a war that was no metaphor, and she would appreciate a last chance candidate who wears grief as his mantle and can quote poetry by heart, which, I admit, softened the cynic who patrols the border inside me to prevent any hope from crossing. For 4 nights, we watched footage of losses. A father lost his job. A husband lost his wife and daughter, and then his son, which reminded me of Lincoln, how he went to Willie's tomb when he yearned once more to hold him. Did you ever dream of a lost friend and feel that you were having a direct communion with that friend, and yet a consciousness that it was not a reality? He asked the army officer guarding the mausoleum. The man answered, yes. The year was 1862, and the whole country waited grief, whole pools of it. Our last chance candidate is running on empathy in a contest between it is what it is and the parable Lincoln loved to tell of the ancient king who wanted a proverb that would apply at all times, in every situation. His wise men said, and this too shall pass away. Lee Stein borrows, or we might say, in the language of rap music, samples 2 lines from Emily Dickinson's poem. It feels from an Emily Dickinson poem. It feels a shame to be alive when men so brave are dead. These 2 lines from a poem Dickinson wrote during the Civil War are punctuated by Dickinson's characteristic dashes. 2 lines, 3 dashes. And Stein notes Dickinson was dashing off a war that was no metaphor. A nod of empathy to the recluse of Amherst, Massachusetts, who suffered vicariously for the soldiers and for the president who wears grief as his mantle and can quote poetry by heart. For example, when Lincoln learned of the report of a just-concluded battle with heavy losses on both sides, he instantly quoted the tomorrow after tomorrow after tomorrow speech uttered by Macbeth, poetic language responding to so much senseless carnage. Our last chance candidate is running on empathy, Stein says. Obviously, that's where I borrowed my title for today's show, Running on Empathy. Last chance conveys a lack of enthusiasm, but the speaker implies a comparison between Biden's loss of his first wife and his young daughter in a car accident, as well as his adult son, Beau, to natural causes, and Lincoln's loss of his son, Willie. Then, in italics, she borrows, or samples, a query from Lincoln when making one of his solitary night visits to Willie's tomb. This is a busy poem, and I'm speculating on the connection between the 1860s and the election of 2020. Also, the occasional line escapes my efforts to determine its meaning. Nonetheless, there are riches here. Again, this is Lee Stein's Lincoln, Abraham, Melancholy Of. He had a sad nature, many said of Lincoln. Or as Emily put it, it feels a shame to be alive when men so brave are dead, dashing off a war that was no metaphor, and she would appreciate a last-chance candidate who wears grief as his mantle and can quote poetry by heart, which, I admit, softened the cynic who patrols the border inside me to prevent any hope from crossing. For 4 nights, we watched footage of losses. A father lost his job. A husband lost his wife and daughter, and then his son, which reminded me of Lincoln, how he went to Withy's tomb when he yearned once more to hold him. Did you ever dream of a lost friend and feel that you were having a direct communion with that friend, and yet a consciousness that it was not a reality? He asked the army officer guarding the mausoleum. The man answered, yes. The year was 1862, and the whole country waited grief, whole pools of it. Our last chance candidate is running on empathy in a contest between it is what it is and the parable Lincoln loved to tell of the ancient king who wanted a proverb that would apply at all times in every situation. His wise men said, and this too shall pass away. That's Lee Stein's Lincoln Abraham, Melancholy of. If you visit the KMUN.org website, on the podcast link for Poems for Company, you will find a list of all the poems read on all my shows month by month. Our theme music is Philip Ahlberg's Going to the Sun from his CD Live from Montana, available at sweetgrassmusic.com. Thank you for listening to Poems for Company.